You read the first book of the Bible, you know what the first book of the Bible is? It's a story about a family. It's a story about a messed up family, a dysfunctional family, that at every turn, they are ready to compromise God's covenant. Spouses are fighting, brothers killing brother, parents are traumatizing their children, there's hurt, there's neglect, and their children are carrying around the wounds from their parents in the form of inferiority complexes, toxic defense mechanisms, only to perpetuate their parents' mistakes. Whether it's Abraham and Ishmael, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. Adam's family is more dysfunctional than the Kardashians, I like to say. You know, when I was young, my father would always say this to me. You know, my father, like many of you might feel, my father was, he was born in the wrong generation. You know, there's that saying, no country for old man. I sense that a lot with my own father. I feel as though he should have been born before the Korean War, but unfortunately, he wasn't. Growing up, my father would always look at me, and he would always say this line in Korean. He would say, 그거 가지고는 안 돼. No matter what I did, 그거 가지고는 안 돼. And what that means is, translated, means, that's not enough. That's not enough. And he said that to toughen me up. He said that so I wouldn't be this, you know, participation trophy kid. And home was, for me, the school of hard knocks. And what that did was I found out that the effect that it had on me was that whenever I had good news, whenever there was something to celebrate, I would never share it and I would never celebrate. Even now, my wife has to slow me down and say, hey, listen, we should celebrate. And for me, it's this awkward, like, I don't know what to do when something good happens because it's never enough. When I was in my 20s, you know, the Lord was good. His providence was on me. I was in ministry. I had a wife, two children, and everything was going so well. And my father, as I was visiting him in our apartment in Brooklyn, he looks at me and he says, do you think that's enough? He says, that's not enough. You know, I was an adult, a father with two children, and I was broken. And it hit me that evening. I thought, oh my goodness, even now I am seeking my father's approval, and even now he fails to give it to me. The question that we want to ask, the wind-up was a bit long, but the question we want to ask is this tension that we have, this tension of seeking ultimate approval from our parents, wanting ultimate acceptance from them, and this other side of our parents' inability of meeting that expectation, how do we deal with this tension? How do we act and live, respond, and how do we care and be in relationship with our own parents, knowing that our desires will never be satisfied by them? How do we live the season of a child gracefully? That's the question I want to ask, and let me offer you two things. First, practical wisdom from Proverbs, and second, the good news through Jesus. First, practical wisdom through Proverbs. Second, the good news through Jesus. The passages that we've read, those are actually not passages for tonight. I originally wanted to give a talk on how to... I wanted to give a talk on our children, how we deal and train and teach our children, but because I'm not giving that talk, I just thought it would be good just to read those verses. The verses that we're going to go through, I'll read for us. Let's look at first chapter 23:22. This is what the author of Proverbs says. Listen to your father who gave you life. Simple, right? Listen to your father who gave you life. Your parents might not have been able to give you everything you wanted. Maybe your dad wasn't around to teach you how to throw a baseball. Maybe he was never around to teach you how to drive a manual car. Maybe he didn't dress up as Santa Claus on Christmas. But for the 364 other days, he looked like Santa Claus. Maybe your mother, she wasn't emotionally there. She wasn't present with you. Maybe. But to judge your parents by what they didn't do for you, that is foolishness. Wisdom is knowing that you owe your existence to your parents. Literally, you live because of them. Your mother carried you in her womb, and in pain she gave birth to you. Wisdom is knowing that your existence changed their entire life. See, Proverbs is reminding us that your life is a result of someone else's hard work. When your mother gave birth to you, it was the result of her effort, her toil, her sacrifice. And in simple terms, Proverbs is telling us, you owe your life to your parents. You were born into debt. A few years ago, our church, during the Syrian crisis, our church got really passionate. The Lord placed upon us a desire for serving the refugee community. We started sponsoring refugee families, families that would come over literally through an organization. We would get connected and we would help a family resettle. It would be a commitment for about 12 months to about a year and a half, 18 months. One of the families that we helped out was a family from Rwanda. It was a family of four. I remember that evening we went to the airport to pick them up. When they cleared customs, they got all their bags, they came out, this refugee family, and we were ready to pour our lives and our hearts into them. They got into the van, we took them to the apartment that we had furnished and set up. They handed over to us this manila folder that they got from the immigration officer, and they said, we don't know what this is. So we took it, opened it up, and we looked, and what we saw was bills. Airfare. Medical bills for their vaccination, any transfer, organization fees, whatever. And for a family of four, they had started their life in America in debt, about, I think, like $15,000. Of course, when I saw this, I said, yes, the American way. Welcome to America, the land of debt. And when I explained to them, oh, this is the money you owe for these things, they weren't frustrated. They weren't complaining. They knew that to get to America, to get to where they were, so many people had to work and toil and sacrifice. They started their life in debt and they understood that. I know some of us have this tendency of wanting to distance ourselves from our parents. I don't know how many of you here think that you are a self-made man. I don't know how many of you are, you know, hey, you know what? My parents were never around. They never taught me anything. I had to learn everything on my own. They never did anything for me. I hear a lot of Korean Americans, second generation Korean Americans say that. I basically raised myself. You know what that is? That is self-righteousness, where you play the victim, you undermine what your parents did for you. And everything you've become, you think you've done it because of your own hard work. That is the definition of self-righteousness. That is Pharisaism. Instead, Proverbs is telling us, reminding us, you owe your life to your parents. Second thing, look with me at these next verses, chapter 15:20 and 17:21. It says this, a wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish man despises his mother. To have a fool for a child brings grief. There is no joy for the parent of a godless fool. And as much as we desire approval from our parents, these proverbs teach us that we are the direct cause of our parents' joy and grief. When we live wisely, that's followed by a sense of accomplishment and peace and joy in our parents' lives. On the flip side, when we act a fool, there's a sense of shame, grief, sorrow, regret that looms over them. You know, there's that well-known saying, you are only as happy as your least happy child. That's right. Now, I know for children, this teaching might come across as unreasonable or difficult to accept. Some of you might be wondering, well, why are my parents so attached to me? Why am I the source of their joy or grief? Why can't they move on and take this burden off of me? To which I would respond, if they could, they would. If they could, they would. Parents, for a moment, just think, if you can turn that switch off, if you can for a moment just stop thinking about your child and be stress-free for about a day, would you? Yes, you would. You would take it. If you could just turn that off and say, you know what, I want to stop worrying about my child, you would take that in a heartbeat. But you can't. You cannot detach yourself emotionally from your child because they are an extension of you. You know, as I got married, older, had children on my own, I thought that, you know what, I would finally be released from this burden of being the source of my parents' joy and grief. And boy, was I wrong. As I got older, I felt as though they were getting more and more attached. They were getting more and more demanding. Things that they didn't care about when we were younger, all of a sudden became important to them. When I got married and had children older, I had forgotten my mother's birthday. I know, terrible son. This is why you don't have sons. But to my defense, my mother, she doesn't go by the Gregorian, the regular calendar. She goes by the lunar calendar. And that is a pain in the butt to calculate every single year. And so one year, of course, we were busy and we forgot. And she threw a fit. And I told my mom, Mom, growing up, every other birthday we forgot, okay? We remembered once every 2 years. But why all of a sudden are you getting so angry at us, trying to cut us off? Why are we constantly the source of your joy and grief? And I thought, that's so trivial. Get over it. I'm an adult. You're an adult. Stop this. And I kept thinking, you know, you're just being so sensitive, right? There's this saying that as people get older, they mature backwards, right? As they get older, they become more and more childlike. Yeah, the older folks are shaking their heads. Yes, you got to be careful. Watch yourself, right? And I was like, you're just being a child. Now, that might be true, but I realized that when it comes to parent and children relationship, I realized that there might be something else. It's not that the parents grow in sensitivity. I think it's that as they get older, they care less about other things, they care less about other people, and they just grow more and more in love and care for you. See, you never stop being the source of your parents' joy and grief. You are a living testimony to them that as they get older and as their life fades, you are the one living testimony that their lives were not in vain. You are a symbol of God's faithfulness. And so that's why they become more and more attached to you. Young adults here, college students, high school students, junior high students, I know you're probably thinking of that next stage. That next stage when you jump, you know what, my parents will leave me alone. That's not going to happen. You will always be their source of joy and grief. Third, because of this, Proverbs teaches us in the next few verses, they teach us to obey our parents. If we look in chapter 23:22, it says this, "Listen to your father who gave you life. Do not despise your mother when she is old." 13:1, "A wise son hears his father's instruction." Chapter 4:3-4, "For I too was a son to my father, still tender and cherished by my mother." According to Proverbs, Proverbs tells us that our parents are wise and we have to listen to them. But the reason that Proverbs tells us that our parents are wise is because they lived longer than you and they know what it's like to be you. "For I too was a son to my father. I listen to him, listen to me," he says. See, in life, we never get a redo. There's no such thing as a mulligan in life. There's no such thing as practice in life. The closest thing to a redo is our parents. People who have the same DNA, similar personalities, similar strengths, albeit it was a different time, they've walked in our shoes. They know what it's like to be you, navigating in this world. And the wisdom they give to you is the closest thing to a redo that we have in life. And so Proverbs says, listen to them. Listen to them. As a child, I couldn't stand it when my father told me what to do, but I saw that he never did it himself. Right? Be nice to your sister, he would say. And of course, the scoffer in me is saying, be nice to your own wife. You know, he would tell me all the time, read books, read books. And I'm thinking, I've never seen you pick up a single book in your life. The only thing you do is read the newspaper and you go straight to the horse track numbers. That's the only thing you read. You know, he would tell me, never drink alcohol. Alcohol is not good for you. And he would drink every night. He would say, this is my vitamins. And I would think, you know what? What hypocrisy. You know, it took me some time to realize that my father wasn't being a hypocrite. That was wisdom. See, he knew his own weaknesses, and he didn't want me to repeat them. Mark Twain, there's this well-known saying attributed to him. He'd say this, when I was a boy of 14 years old, my father was so ignorant, I could hardly stand to have the man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much the old man had learned in 7 years. What is he saying? He's saying not that his father got smarter, but as he got older, he realized, oh, you know what? My father is wise. And now as a parent, I can't help but to see, whenever I see my own weaknesses in my kids, that's when I lose it. When I see my weaknesses in my own children, that's when I get so angry and I have to correct them. There's this sense of responsibility, like, oh no, I need to fix this. And there's also a sense of remorse. He is like that because he is my son. And I need to do something about it. I don't want him to experience the same consequences. I don't want him to go through the same needless pain. I want him to be better than me. And wisdom, Proverbs is offering us wisdom. Wisdom as in not repeating the mistakes of the previous generation. You know, Solomon at the beginning of Proverbs, you know what he warns his son against? The most, the adulterous woman. Does anyone know anything about Solomon's life? You know what his biggest weakness was? Women. Why does he warn his son about women? Because he lived it, he experienced it, and he doesn't want his son to make the same mistake. And that, friends, is wisdom. We listen to our parents not because they are the smartest, brightest, sharpest, most culturally attuned people in the world. No, we listen to them because they are most like us. They lived us. They know what it's like. I want to make a few remarks on 23:22b, where the author of Proverbs says, "Do not despise your mother when she is old." This word despise means to look down on. It means to have a lack of respect for. It's inevitable that as your parents enter into old age, they'll become slower. Those of you who have aging parents, you'll know they'll need more help. Of course, they find it harder to adapt to new technology. I think maybe one out of every five phone calls I get from my mom is, oh, the Wi-Fi is not working. Can you help me? And I'm just like, I told you already. Or sometimes she would say, I don't know what my password is. Can you tell me? And I would get so angry. I said, I told you, write it down. And I would just sometimes lose my patience. As parents get older, they'll need more and more help. They'll repeat what they said over and over again. And sometimes as children, there is a tendency in us to look down on them. See, Proverbs knows that it's so easy to go from caring for your parents with gratitude to caring for them with disdain. See, it's possible that in our care for our parents, we treat them as less than. Kathy Nielsen says this, To despise the elderly is not always to scorn openly. Sometimes it's just a matter of treating older ones as quietly laughable, ignorable, or invisible. I don't know how you are with your parents as they age. And you know, yeah, you might be the good, obedient son, obedient daughter who cares for them, who looks after them. But Proverbs is telling us to check our hearts, that as we care for our aging parents, to not just care about them, but care for them. That in our care for them, as we help them with their hospital visits, as we help them with their medications, as we help them with their internet and their Wi-Fi, that we don't secretly, in our hearts, look down on them. We don't mock them in our hearts. We don't consider their attitudes and their opinions as misinformed. Instead, what Proverbs does is it teaches us to care for our parents in the same way they cared for us when we were a child. When we were ignorant, when we were childish, when we were foolish, our parents, did they ever look at us and mock us? When we were a little child not knowing anything, did they ever look at us, see us as invisible, see us as misinformed? No, they cared for us with compassion, not with contempt. They didn't look down on us, but they had this unwavering commitment to care for us, despite all the foolish things that we've done and said. Despite all the things I've done and said, I don't recall my parents ever once laughing at me, scoffing at me, mocking me. And Proverbs is teaching us that as our parents get older, to return that favor, to love them compassionately and caringly. This is the wisdom that we get from Proverbs as we care for our parents. Now, if I were to end the message here, it would be quite incomplete because I haven't addressed what is for some of you the elephant in the room. And that is, for some of you, your parents were not the best parents. In fact, they might have been really bad parents. For some of you, your parents exhibited foolishness through neglect. You suffered abandonment, abuse. And to just simply take Proverbs and follow this wisdom with your parents might not apply too well. For others, maybe you were raised by one parent, and so listening to a father and mother simply doesn't apply. And for everyone else here, I'm sure there are some aspects of this message, of what Proverbs is teaching, that is just difficult to accept and understand because of your specific family dynamics. I'm not trying to cookie cut Proverbs into your specific life. And that is why what Proverbs can't do, I turn your attention to the gospel, because the gospel can do it. See, in the good news of Jesus, what we have is we have the promise of a perfect family. Whether your parents failed or succeeded at parenting, whether there's a family that you feel like you belong to or not, the promise of the gospel is that through Jesus, the perfect Son of God, you are welcomed into the eternal family of God, where God is your father and Jesus is your brother. And saints from eternity past and saints from eternity here on are now your brothers and sisters. And the gospel promises us that whatever expectations that we have for approval, whatever expectations we have from our parents for ultimate approval, all of that is met exceedingly in Jesus. The gospel tells us that whatever hurt you experienced, whatever lack of approval that you suffered, the love of God more than covers up for that, because his love and his approval is never conditioned upon anything that you can say or do. God loves you perfectly and completely because of Jesus. And that satisfies our deepest longing. Go back to a moment for Jacob. For those of you who are familiar with the story, you know how the story goes. You know how Jacob received ultimate approval and acceptance from his father? You know what he had to do? He had to put on his brother's clothes. Jacob pretended to be Esau by putting on his clothes, and when he does this, his father puts his hands on him and he says, "Oh, these are the hands of my son Esau." And what he says to Jacob in that moment, he says, "Come near me and kiss me, my son." And as he goes near to his son, he says, "Oh, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed." What is Isaac doing? He has mistaken Jacob for Esau. You know, when Isaac laid his hands upon him, and when Jacob is there on his knees, receiving that ultimate approval, those words of affirmation, those words of acceptance, unconditional love that he so longed for, you can imagine Jacob. He is breaking down. He is breaking down because he's finally hearing and receiving that which is so longed for. Oh, the bliss of hearing that my father loves me. Yet Jacob is broken inside because he knows that he is not deserving of this. He knows that he is only receiving this love and approval from his father because of his older brother. And friends, that is the gospel. That is the good news. That when we believe and trust in Jesus, we are putting on his clothes. We are taking on his righteousness. We receive his image and his spirit to the point that when God sees us, he doesn't see needy Stephen. He doesn't see fearful John. He doesn't see sinful Peter. When he touches your hands, he says, "Oh, the hands of my son, those nail-pierced hands that paid the perfect sacrifice." When we draw near to him, he doesn't say, "Oh, you stink, get away from me." He says, "Oh, the smell of my son, righteousness, the sweet aroma of faithfulness unto me." And he embraces us. When he sees us, he sees his son. And the only difference is, unlike Isaac, God is not blind. He doesn't need to be tricked into thinking that you are Jesus or like Jesus. He is the one who clothes you himself with his son's righteousness. See, friends, our deepest need for approval will never be met by our parents. Parents, please do not be mistaken. Your children's deepest need for love, acceptance, and approval, you cannot meet that.